David, are you sick?
Yeah, I'm getting over it.
Oh.
I'm almost back to 100%.
Well, that's good. I'm sorry you were sick.
Thank you.
That's no fun.
No.
I just got back last night from a vacation, and so luckily I'm not sick because we were around a bunch of people who had been sick,
So
like the previous
you were
day.
gone for like 2 full weeks almost?
No, it was like 10 days.
Oh,
Yeah.
wow.
Yeah.
Right on,
Well,
man.
it may not have even been that long. I don't know. It felt like a long time. But yeah, I went down to Florida and went and saw my brother on the way down. My brother recently moved, and so got to hang out with him a little bit and spend time with family in Florida. And then our plan on the way back was to stay with some other friends, but they ended up not being able to hang out. So we had an extra day, like travel day back to figure out a place to stop and figure out something to do. So I started looking up places to hike in Tennessee and came across this place that I had never heard of before called Fall Creek Falls. It's a state park. Absolutely beautiful. Like I was like just looking for state parks in Tennessee because it was a good distance on the way. And they have what apparently is the tallest waterfall. What was it? East of the Rockies or something like that? Something to that effect. And so, I was like, oh, they have a lodge at the state park. I'll just get a room at the lodge. The lodge was super cool, super modern,
Was
and
that
David,
like
you would have
a
loved.
walk-in? Like you were able to walk in and book a room? Because that's like impossible in state parks.
I mean, I did it online, but I think he probably could have. There were a lot of people there. It wasn't empty when we got there.
No, it's been my experience when you travel from state park to state park, like they're always completely overbooked and you're not even allowed to park in the parking lot. They're like, you have to leave. And I'm like, I haven't slept in
Well,
40 hours. Like, we
I
don't
booked it
care. Drive off a cliff.
a couple days ahead of time and was able to get a room for six, which was, kind of
Amazing.
crazy. But it was a very, very cool state park, lodge. It was modern. It looked like it had been built in the last few years, which is kind of weird for a state park. Like, you don't think of them building new lodges. Maybe they do. The lodges I've stayed in state parks before were like built in the 60s. And so they look like they were built in the 60s, which has
Yeah,
its
they
own
feel like
charm.
it too, and they smell like it.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we kind of were going into this
Kind of
one like,
nostalgic. It's kind of nice.
it's going to be like that. But this one was modern and really nice looking. Absolutely beautiful area. And so we ended up staying at this lodge. We got in late, just slept there. And then the next morning went on a couple of hikes. Different hikes to different waterfalls and just gorgeous. And just, you hike down into the mountains and then you're at the bottom of this waterfall where there's a giant swimming hole and there's tons of people there and everybody's just like swimming and playing in the water and everything. It was a really good time. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere. So if you drive through Nashville or drive through Tennessee, you're not going to go through like any of the big cities. Oh, my dogs just got home. My wife just picked up our dogs from the boarding place, and I can hear them running around upstairs. Now I want to pause and go play with my dogs.
Oh.
Anyway, it's kind of in the middle of nowhere. So if you go there, which I would recommend going there, you're just going to have to, do back roads for quite a while to get there. But absolutely worth it. I highly recommend it. So that's basically all I've done in the last week. I'm done talking because I haven't
Well,
done
let me
anything.
just quickly before we go any further, do I sound okay? I'm on the computer microphone, I just realized.
You're a little quiet.
Like talking a little bit closer, is that better?
A little bit. We could always stop and you
You
can
want to
switch
do that?
mics
Because
if you want
I
to.
realize my mic unplugged somehow. So, you
Okay.
want
You
to
want to
stop and
stop and
start?
switch mics?
Yeah, if you're okay with it. I mean, if I don't
Yeah,
sound any
sure.
different, it don't matter to me. What did I do for the last couple of weeks? I made a video a couple of weeks ago. It might have been the last time we got together. 10 things to do on the plasma cutter, which is like it's 12 out of 10. Is it possible to be lower rated than 10 out of 10?
I was like, wait, what?
It's 11
Got
out of
it.
10. Yeah, no, it's
Not
like,
doing well. That's what you're saying.
no, but that's okay. But it's still got some good information, and the comments are good. That's a nice relief when the videos tank, but the comments are like, this is the best thing I've ever seen. You're like, oh, thanks. You want to come stay at my house? Come on over.
We can be best friends.
Come on, let's be friends. And then I put out a video of me making a type-on sign. I agreed to make them a sign for a trade show, and that kind of went off the rails. I was like panic mode all week last week because I was trying to save this end grain veneer I was trying to make, and I made it all too thin, and then it potato chipped, and then I couldn't flatten it, and then besides all that, it just looked did not look like what I hoped it would look like. So I had to change course in the middle, but in the video is a little bit about that, and that got a little bit of play. But I've been working on my big boot, my big Carolina go-kart boot. And I don't know if anybody's been following. Paul made a masterpiece out of wood. He made it like a work boot kind of shape out of wood tiles. It's beautiful. It's all fiberglass, so it's going to be super strong. And then Derek hooked up with a guy we met, Chris McCormick, who you, Bob, you've been texting with. Chris McCormick, who owns Hatch Displays. And together, Derek went down there and printed a perfect replica of a boot. And then I made a boot that looks like it's made out of paper mache and toilet paper. Everyone says it looks exact. I'm like, no, the scale got off, and it's like, okay. It's like something you'd, like if you went to like one of those carnivals where somebody would get like their finger chopped off by accident on like the tilt-a-wheel, and then they had like a boot go merry-go-round. Like my boot would be one of the merry-go-round cars. It's like kind of like that. Like too much paint, like bad detail. So it's going to be very tongue-in-cheek, but mine is made out of very thick fiberglass. You could stand on it, or if you fill in the hole, you could probably use it as a boat itself. So I worked on that, and that's basically done. I can show you guys pictures. I got all the details done. And today I'm hoping to maybe take my first drive in it around the property just to see how it works. I don't think it's overweight in any way because I was able to drive it. The heavy part is the boot itself. That's just the lower, and then the upper is like the sleeve of the boot that would kind of go up your ankle. And they made that separate out of screening material. I'll send you guys pictures so that you could see through it. And I asked Derek, because Derek is a proper boot. I said, how are you going to solve your seeing through it? And he got like a backup camera. So he could see the camera through his phone. So he's going to drive the cameras mounted on the bottom of the frame, like right at the road level. And he's going to be able to be inside the boot with, like, no visible way out.
Oh, he's going to be so sick.
It lifts up like a funny car, and then you get in and you close it. And he's going to be able to look through the camera on his phone.
I hope he didn't get motion sickness, because that will be rough. Like, you know, your body doing one thing, but your eyes being lower on the front of the – in a different spot, that might be rough.
Yeah, so we'll see. Well, we don't have the – it's not the East Durham 500. It's just going to be – we're just going to go tooling around a little bit, and then I made mine so that I could immediately take my top off, so then I have a go-kart to play with. And so this weekend is the go-kart track event.
That's wild, man. I don't know how you do stuff like that.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
That's crazy.
I'm glad you like it. I look at it and it just looks so scrappy, but it's the bigger picture.
It is huge.
It's big.
It's so big.
It's 11 feet
tall. The little
one
you should put on an RC car. So you
have that's funny. Mini-me. Yeah. That's very funny. Did I ever tell you, you just reminded me of a funny story because Paul Jackman's always got like a clever secret up his sleeve. A couple years ago at Maker Camp, Total Boat sponsors a little sailboat race. And everybody, they have these laser cut sailboats and everybody puts them together and they use all the resin to seal the hull and everything. And then when it came time to do the race at the end of the weekend, Jackman puts his boat in the water and like he had secretly installed a radio control in it. So everyone's boat, it was just like depending on like the wind. There's like hardly any wind. Everyone's boat's just like meandering like on the lake. And Jackman's just like doing loop to loops around everybody. It was really very, very funny.
So really funny. I'm looking at this picture that you sent. Now I know nobody listening can see this, but there's this little homemade tool on the table.
Oh, yeah.
That has a pattern on it.
Oh, yeah.
I assume you made this tool so that you could paint on the stitching for the boot.
Yep. I made that in a reel. I owed Weaver Welding. It's Lincoln Welding. It's a different thing. Lincoln Welding is selling the Jesse Combs welding helmet, and they're doing it to raise money for their foundation, with Jesse Combs Foundation, where they put girls through scholarship programs. And so they asked me to do something for that, and I needed to make this, so I was able to weld up the little handle. So there's a reel, and the reel promotes Jesse's helmet, and it also promotes, and I just show you how I'm making that little doodad wheel. And that's to paint the stitches on the, and I did it in a rush when I did it for the video. So if you look at the boot, it's all scrappy looking in the back. but today I'm going to repaint them. I have the brown paint. I'm going to cover up some of the scrappy stitches and redo it. So don't judge. Don't judge.
That's pretty cool, though.
Yeah, so I made a little stitch wheel so that I could paint. Because I imagined me hand-painting all those stitches, and I was like, this is going to be a nightmare.
Yeah, that would not be fun.
So I didn't do that.
Well, I think your boot looks pretty amazing.
Oh, thank you. Well done. And then I've been working every day. I have now it's the same mentality as with the when I built the boat. Every single day I have to glue a prominent piece onto the woody every day before I go to sleep. So last night I realized it was about midnight and I hadn't done anything on the woody, so I spent about an hour gluing more wood on the woody. So every single day between now and August 18th I have to get this thing done.
So I was in St. Augustine, Florida, last week one time, and we went to the surf shop. Out front of the surf shop, there was a woody, and I immediately sent Jimmy pictures of it. But I'd never asked you, is that the same type of car, or is it just a woody-like car?
No, it's a woody. It's a woody. That era, the woody was really popular in the 40s. So from 42 to 3 to 50. Woodies were very popular. So most of the ones you see are around 47, 48, 40, 46. And when you made a proper woody, everything was flat. The doors were flat. Everything was flat. So I'm starting with the front cab of my car, which is curved because it wasn't meant to be a woody. So I'm coming off of the two curved cup doors, and that's sending that. If you would extrude an if you would extrude in 360 in Fusion, you extrude an image, right? You imagine the back of those doors, I have to extrude it, but also maintain that fair curve. So my woody is going to have all these curves in it that a typical woody wouldn't have in it.
I see.
Because it's being projected from the original car. I could just put a square box behind it, but it would have no relationship design-wise to the front. I could put a square box behind that cab, and that probably everybody would be like, oh my God, it's a woody. But it would drive somebody like me crazy because I see the car has this nice dynamic concave or convex feel to it, and you want that convex feel to kind of be projected all the way to the back, so it kind of have bulge out and then come back to a point that would be the back of the car. So that's where the complication lies, is me trying to project this bulge as if it's I've definitely gotten it, and now I'm just tweaking it and doing all the various little pieces that would be attached.
The part that is over the door, does that come off so then you can do the body work on the door?
No. Everything is glued to the door for good. And I'm going to fill that white spot in. Anywhere where there's white or airspace is going to get filled in with a mahogany panel.
Gotcha. Yes. Yeah. I can picture it now. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm just gluing stuff directly to the door. And then I showed this on Instagram the other day. This one piece right here, that's at the front of the door. I try to telegraph a flat piece onto it. And there was no way. So I had to take a chunk of wood that was 2 inches thick. And this piece ultimately ended up only being a quarter inch thick. And I had to bandsaw it so it would match the shape of the car. So you see a piece of wood on the car. You think I just took a flat piece and just stuck it on the car. I wish I could have done that. But I had to take a piece of wood and cut this shape out of it. So I had this much material and this much material and bandsaw it out and make it fit. That was my experiment. So I have to do the next one on camera.
And so these are epoxied on, or how?
Yeah,
how
they're just epoxied on with Total Boat Thixo, which is the stuff that comes out of the tube mix. That's really good stuff.
Crazy.
Wood to wood, I'm using all Type On 3, and then metal to wood, I'm using Thixo.
So the one I sent you pictures of is an Oldsmobile.
Yep.
I'm seeing that now. I didn't realize that in the moment, but I see Oldsmobile on the back of it. It's crazy, man. I don't know. What you're working on is pretty awesome.
It's nice.
I would have the patience to build the back end of a car out of wood, but good on you.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Oldsmobile you sent. You can see how flat it is. It's got a little bit of dynamic curve.
On the sides of it, there is a little bit of a profile. It's not completely flat, but it doesn't have the kind of taper towards the back like you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's more squared off in the back end.
But that is such a beautiful car. It's probably it's got almost the same fender structure as the one that I'm working on. With the fenders. Crazy.
It was pretty cool. And it was just sitting out in front of a little surf shop. And they also had this little this little tiny... Do you remember the Toyota minivan from like the mid-80s, late-80s, and it had, it wasn't the caravan-looking minivan. It had a more vertical front. Oh, man, it's going to bug me. It was like the, I don't even know what to call it. Toyota minivan, 80s. You'll probably know the shape. Oh, it was the, what is this called? It's just called the Toyota van?
Toyota van?
The passenger van. Wonder Wagon. Well, okay. Anyway, if you know the know what an 80s Toyota minivan looked like, it had a real angular front and back. And the surf shop had what looked to be that exact same van, but it was like a clown car sized. It was tiny. And it wasn't like one of the tiny trucks. It was smaller than that. It was like one person could sit in the front, I think.
Was it a gag thing or was this a real thing?
No, it was a real car. It was like sitting in their parking lot. I think it was like, I don't think somebody had parked there. I think it was part of the place. But as we were pulling out of the parking lot, we looked over and we saw this tiny little van. We're like, what is that thing? But we were already in traffic and we couldn't turn around, and it was super cool. But maybe somebody knows what it was. But it had that same look as the kind of, I don't know, angular. I don't know what you call these.
It's a weird looking van, that's for sure.
It really is. And it had a name. It had like an iconic name, but I don't know what it was.
I'm picturing the Ford Transit, the Mini.
What is... Oh, man. Well, anyway.
It has a Space Rover type feel to it.
yeah. And it was one that they made some of the original Transformers were modeled using this van as their
that's interesting.
Vehicle, you know, which makes it even more like unreal. It's not a normal van, but people drove them, but I don't know what it's called. Anyway, David, what have you been doing?
Well, speaking of cars, I got rid of one.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Yes. I sold the 67 Impala. It went to a family member. It's Kelly's stepmom's dad, and he's been working on this Mazda RX-7, and I think he just wanted like an American muscle car, and so he is selling that. He bought mine, and now the Impala is going to get the love that it needs. So yeah,
that's awesome.
Good. So there's quite the relief to not have it anymore, because it needs so much work and it's so big, it takes up so much space. I didn't think I was going to have any weird feelings when it left, and I didn't. In fact, yesterday when I was driving in my truck, I was behind an old car, and just seeing that old car in front of me gave me the anxiety of driving the Impala, because that Impala left me stranded twice. And I, even though I got those things fixed, I was never able to fully trust it.
And that's, you know, I don't trust any of my trucks to drive outside of town. It's just when I got like a brand new car, I could just hop in a brand new car and just know I can just go forever and not worry.
Yeah. And it's like when I used to have a motorcycle, and I never got to fully enjoy it because I just never trusted anybody around me. There was always this anxiousness. But when I hop in my Ridgeline, I don't even think about driving. I just drive. And so I never got the same feeling with the Impala. I never got the same feeling with the motorcycle. And so I'm glad it's gone to a place that it's going to get the love that it needs.
Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah, I'm glad it you know where it is too.
Yeah,
just like gone forever, and who knows what happens to
it. Yeah, and I told him, I'm like, you could sell it tomorrow, and I will be okay with it. You know, you don't have to. And
Without getting specific, did that car hold its value? Because after we talked about it a couple of days ago, for the first time, I got one suggested to me for some reason on Instagram because we talked about it. And it was like a $50,000 car. It looked exactly like the one that you had. Yours wasn't perfect, but.
Yeah,
I mean, I assume it held some value.
I mean, it was nowhere close to that. I mean, so the car, I'll get into the numbers. It's not that big of a deal to me. When my father passed away, the car actually went to my uncle, and then he had it for a couple of years. And he then sold it to me for $6,000. And then I was trying to sell the car for $12,000. But if it went to a family member, I would go to $10,000. So I got it. I sold it for $10,000.
Oh, yeah. That's really good for
it. Yeah. And that's... I came up with these numbers by just looking around at other sales. Comps. Yeah. There are $50,000 Impalas.
Yeah.
You see them all the time. This one was nowhere near that. It's
This one must have had like a souped up engine and stuff, but it was also obviously a mint.
When you restore a car, you can go two ways. You can go original or you can go all custom. And there was not many original things about it. Some things were custom. Some things needed a lot of work. Some things were great. And I think $10,000 is a really, really good deal. I probably could have got a lot more if I tried, but now I have the space in that other garage to do other things.
Yeah.
And $10,000.
And $10,000, yeah.
Well, that's when I sold the hearse a few years ago, I was like, Rob's like, let's just sell this thing. You never use it. I'm like, good idea. We were able to sell it like within 2 days.
Hmm.
And then I had my whole space back.
I'm considering selling the Green Land Cruiser. I don't know if we talked about that or not. But
you mentioned something about it, I think.
Yeah. If anybody's interested, let me know. I'm not in a hurry to get rid of it, but at the same time, it's just like I don't drive it. It's just sitting there taking up space. And the reality of me like restoring it after the Ghia, I mean, I might do it, but it would be a really long time from now, and I don't want it to sit there that long and not get taken care of and stuff. So I don't know.
Have you ever, like, when I got the car, I had all these plans. I went through this whole like course on bodywork and painting, and I bought all of these things to do that, like thousands of dollars of materials and tools to do all this work that I never did. Have you ever invested that much money into something and then not go through it all the time?
Every week I buy stuff. I bought all this casting material, and it's still on my list of videos to do. I want to do shell casting with bronze, where you make a ceramic shell around a wax, burn it out. I was in a rush to buy it all, and it's all sitting right there. I haven't done anything with it.
It just, part of me feels like I failed myself, and that's an over exaggeration. I don't actually feel that way, but there's this little disappointing thing, like, that skill would have come in really handy to do other things, even if it was just like art. I thought if I could learn to do this body work, learn to do all the painting and everything, I could take an old toolbox and then combine it with a car fender and do crazy stuff with it. I can still do all that, but I don't know.
Do you have any interest in another vehicle, like a smaller scale, maybe a motorcycle or a scooter or something that would be a little bit less, you know, a lot to do that work too?
Yes and no. I think I lean more towards the no. I have so many hobbies. I have so many things that I love doing. There's no need for me to add another thing because I already have more things that I wanted. I already have too many things I want to do.
Yeah,
I have too many hobbies.
You have so many things that you probably could share this experience. You have so many things to do that when you walk by and you see like a pile of FedEx packages that you got, you're like, oh yeah, I have to do that too. I forgot about that. Pile of UPS boxes of like some process and material. You're like, yes, damn, I wanted to do that. I forgot all about it completely.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny you say the FedEx boxes, because I will see something, I'll get inspired by something like, oh, I want to try that. Okay, and then I go down that rabbit hole of spending a whole day of like watching videos. And then I like books, so I buy a couple books. And then I figure out the materials that I need. I order all the materials, and those boxes are sitting on a shelf. It's just, it's potential. There's a potential project in there somewhere. I've done this with, it's not concrete, but it's like concrete for making forms and materials. And then there's other like smooth on boxes that are just been unopened for years on the shelf, and fiberglass materials. I have all of these things because I was excited one day and I went all in on trying to understand how a thing works that I haven't gotten to yet.
Yep.
Okay. So we talked about this many times. Like I've heard that from you a bunch that we all do this. I'm wondering, is there, you know that about yourself, you know that you get excited and you buy all the stuff and then it may or may not, you know, end up getting in the process of getting done. Does that bother you? Or is that just like, yeah, that's just how I am. That's what I do. And some of these things make it and some of these things don't.
Yeah.
Is it something you want to change, or is that just an observation?
Jessamite is what I was trying to think of earlier, as the material. It doesn't really bother me. It still excites me because, like, okay, when I am ready for it, those materials are there. I've got the books. I've got the playlist, YouTube playlist that I made for reference. I think I get really excited about potential.
I see stuff sitting around like that, and I think to myself, all right, when I run out of things to do, that's still there for me. It's so it's like so on the bottom.
When I run out of things to do,
that's there waiting for me. I'm like, oh yeah, okay. I could bake bread when I could do my sourdough bread when everything else is done and it gets cold out. that's how I look at it.
Right, I mean, I look at that the same way.
It's sitting around for me to finally dig into. It just sits.
I get blocked on a lot of projects for, you know, waiting on material or waiting on a sponsor or waiting on something. And so, like, having those things around, I'm the same way. It's like, well, okay, I'm blocked on this, but I have that box of casting material. I have that little furnace that I've never used because I wanted to try to make this thing. And so now I can actually do that. I was just wondering if that was something that you wanted to figure out how to change, or like change your perspective on it, or that's just like, yeah, that's just how I am, and that's part of my
no process. It's not something I want to change. There's other things that I need to change first.
I think the reason that that came to mind is because I think that's something about myself that I both am fine with, but I also want to change. Like, I'm fine with getting excited about something and ordering the parts and the materials and having it on hand for what I just said, you know, in case if I need to pivot to that, I've got it there and I don't have to worry about it. On the other hand, I want less. I want fewer things and I want less. I have the desire. That's such a weird phrase. I've been trying to figure out how to say that differently. I want to have fewer things, but I also want less, meaning like I don't want as much. I don't want as much of what I currently have, and I don't want to want as much coming in. Like, those are two different thoughts, and I'm not sure how to say them differently. But I think that kind of pre-hoarding thing where you're just like, yeah, I'm going to get all the stuff and have it all just in case I need it. There's something in me that's like, I really want to try to fight against that, because if I don't end up using it, then 6 months down the road, I've got more stuff that I then have to figure out to sell away or whatever. And so, like, I'm kind of back and forth on that. I'm both sides of it.
It's not like I have barns full of these potential projects. It's just
was that a jab at Jimmy?
it's a fun little jab. Just a fun little one.
You should see my pottery kiln. Looks like it's like a game of like who could put one more thing on it. Like the last person.
That's great.
It's got like electrical pliers and outlets because it's in the barn, and it ends up being the work surface.
It's just some things on a shelf. It's potential. The car stuff, the car painting, the car body work, that just happens to be the biggest investment, and the materials that are very specific to that particular thing. So that it's just that one that kind of bothers me a little bit, but I could still I can still figure out how to use it. And actually I've used the HVLP gun for spray and finish, which it works amazing for. So I have gotten use out of that. It's just now I have a gallon of pearl white paint, auto paint, and base
That can be
clear coat.
expensive, right?
And
That's expensive. That pearl white is
oh
expensive.
yeah, it's quite the investment. It's all from Eastwood, and then I have all this bodywork tools and stuff that I have never touched.
Oh, you know what happened to me over the break? I didn't tell anybody because I was too embarrassed. I pulled into my parking lot. Now, the spot where I rent my shop, there was an environmental issue, and the EPA came. This is 25 years ago. The EPA came in and tested the groundwater in several spots, and there's spigots so that the EPA can go and test the groundwater in like five odd spots on the property. And there's nothing you could do about them because they're there for like the next 30 years where they test the groundwater. And there's a spigot, it's just like a hole, like a coupling sticking out of the ground, and two steel poles on either side in like five spots at my property. And we all know where they are, and they collect garbage around them. But every once in a while, everyone cleans up, and there's nothing around them except the poles. So I pulled in the parking lot the other day, and there was a couple of cars, so I park where I usually don't. And then Rob was like helping me unload. We were unloading something, and then I went to get. I go. I got to run. I'll be right back. Rob goes, "Be careful! The pole's right near your car." I go, "Yeah, I see it." I looked in my rearview mirror, and this is my new truck. New. It's 2 years old now. I look in my rearview mirror, and I see one of the two poles. I didn't see the other pole that was like a quarter of an inch away from my car. I go to pull away, crushes in my big flare fender. Like the second I put it in drive and start moving, like the crush sound immediately begins. That's how close I was to the pole. And Rob just like puts his hands on his head. He's like, "I told you were near the pole." I was like, "I know. I thought you were talking about the other one." And so that day I was so frustrated and annoyed. Crushed the molding, crushed the light, put a dent, popped in. I could send you a picture. It's gross. And I went home and I said, like, "I'm gonna fix this right now." I went in, I got my slide hammer out. I made this little coupling to weld to the dent. I ground out a few spots. I welded right to the dent. I pulled the plastic off. I pulled everything off. And I pulled the dent out to like 80%. And then now I have to paint the whole side of the brand new car. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to leave this to the professionals. They can decide to cut out my work or use my work as the beginning of what they're going to do. I showed my body friend. I was like, "What do you think they would do if, what would you do if this came in your shop? Because we would just fix what you started and just smooth it out some more and then Bondo it and then work it in and then paint it." So okay, maybe I saved myself $100 by pulling the dent out for them. But it's it was so frustrating. So I bought a new Markolite online. So I put a new Markolite in and all the popoids that hold the plastic fender shroud on are all broken. So I have a squeeze clamp holding that thing on my car, so I'm driving around with a squeeze clamp holding this. But my appointment is July 22nd to have a to get my car fixed at a local body shop, so they're going to fix it up right.
Man, where are you going to drive the whole time your car's in the shop?
I don't know. None of my cars work.
Is that a little jab, Bob?
That was a big jab.
That was a big jab.
I'm going
Okay.
to drive your green your green.
Yeah, that's right. More on my Land Cruiser.
So that was frustrating. But I like the feeling of I have to immediately correct this right now because I'm such an idiot was like very prevalent. And so I was like, you know what? Nothing. It's
Okay.
not going to get any worse. I'm only going to make it better. So let me just
Was that
start.
feeling there because it's the new truck? It's like your daily kind of driver, or was it just a matter of I made a mistake and now I want to get rid of that mistake
Yeah,
as quickly as
all
possible?
that. I'm sending you guys a picture of the crush.
Yeah.
It was so annoying. I was like, I just can't believe I just did this. How
What
stupid.
words came out of your mouth?
MF for this, MF for that. Yeah. There, I'll send you that picture. That's like a
Well,
really, it's hard to see from the picture, but it's a really deep dent. But anyway, I pulled it up mostly.
yeah.
And then they're going to fix it up and paint the side of my truck over.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's pretty. That's quite a dent.
And then this might be an image of me pulling it out. You can see in that picture where I pulled it out a little
Using the hot glue, huh?
It didn't work. The dent was so firm. So that was my tw that's my 2023 truck, and then I have the 2018 truck, and I bought the 2018 truck around the same couple of days I bought the go-kart track in 2018. So now the 2018 Chevy Silverado, which I have now, has 140,000 miles on it. It was probably about 2 weeks old when I brought a friend to show them the go-kart track. I'm like, look, I just bought this. This is great. Everything's great. Look at me. Look at me. And then as I went to pull out of the parking lot, in the dark, it was late at night, we went to pull out, and I drove and I dragged my car alongside the pole that has two things for chains to chain up the whole entrance of the parking lot. I did not see it, and I was like, this car is like 10 days old. Back up, and there's two big streaks in the side of my brand new car. Like deep streaks. And I brought it in for a quote. They said $3,000 to fix. I was like, I'll just leave it. So since that car has been a week old, it's had two deep scratches, like deep dent scratches on the side. And I just left it. So I can tolerate the pain.
Yeah,
I mean, this time it was too much. This was just too much. I had to do this. This was too much.
So, David, we were talking about like a topic for today earlier on, and you mentioned scaling, but we didn't really like figure out what that was, or we didn't hear what you meant by that. Is that something you want to talk about?
So my thought was, what are your thoughts on scaling now compared to your thoughts on scaling before? I have always had this like back and forth. Like when I first started the business, I'm like, oh, I might scale this up to maybe there's some employees helping me with this. And then I never really did that. I just had somebody help me film. And then after a long period, I was like, I like not scaling. I like being able to do what I want to do. And I now I'm thinking about scaling again. Like, what do I do to future proof so I can keep being a business person for the rest of my life? And so it's just, I don't really have any thoughts beyond that. It's just kind of something that popped into my head, and just wanted to hear what you guys thought about scaling and the future and how it compares to what you thought the future was going to be 10 years ago.
Yeah. I kind of like the peaceful life that I have now. I see lectures and I see guys doing talks and, you know, how they sold a million widgets on Etsy and they basically cracked the code and the whole family works in the factory. And I think about that and I think to myself, wow, that's amazing. But that has certainly passed me by. I don't think that's something I would even want if it was handed to me. It's to think about. I mean, I certainly want a product that's going to sell, of course. You know, you want something that's going to last the test of time, and you know, the ice pick is not going to put me through doctorate school, but it's an annuity. It's something. And, you know, the YouTube channel is something that's an annuity as long as YouTube stays in business. And I'm still always searching for that product that could scale on its own. But in general, I'm pretty comfortable where I'm at. You know, like I jokingly said before we started, I'll make a widget and I'll show it online and everyone's like, oh, that's cool. Is that going to be on your website? And I'm like, no. You could have one if you want it. And I just like send it to my paper. I'm like, you could have one. Like, because the idea of trying to scale up and sell, like the leather bags, I thought that was going to be a thing. And it is. I still sell one. I think I might have sold one this morning. In fact, I got an email. But those would be easy to do because that's peaceful and easy and they sell for a lot of money. So you could spend a day and make several thousand dollars versus spending a day and making like $800 in product, whatever it is. So I still have faith in the leather bag thing scaling up a little bit. And all my girlfriends say, my style will sell when it's cold out. They say it's definitely not a summer bag. It's a winter bag. We'll see what happens going into fall. I'm going to do another hard push. Meanwhile, there's a couple of bags here and there at stores in the area, and yeah, they sell like once every 2 months. I sold one on Etsy a couple of weeks ago. I don't know. The idea of scaling, like at this point, if I haven't figured it out, I don't think I'm going to figure it out. But when I look at my life for the last 10 years, you know, I haven't had a chance to review my shop tour video that I did when I had one container in my backyard. I remember I had a shop tour and I had one container, and I like show like all the shops that I had, and which was downtown, and then my my little shop here. And now there's so much more to it. So I definitely scaled up, so to speak. I got a lot more stuff here. But in general, as far as scaling, it's just me and, you know, two part-time assistants. They've kind of fill in each other's gaps, and they're both very, very part-time. You know, it's not like it used to be. I used to have so much more to do all the time. It's definitely relaxed. Yeah. And I'm okay with that. I mean, I'm still making money. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, I've been through the scaling thing a few times in different ways.
Even before YouTube, right? Didn't you scale up a big company, a computer company?
Yeah, I mean, not a huge company, but yeah, my friend and I, right out of college, started a web design firm, and then I think at our biggest we had maybe, I don't really remember, 14 employees or something like that, which is a lot.
That sounds like a prison sentence for me.
Yeah. And then, you know, we sold that, and then I worked for people for a while and then started doing this. And then, you know, we had five full-time a few years back. And I think in both of those instances, I expected scaling to be creating or like other people doing certain parts of the work to allow me to do more of the parts that I wanted. I think that was the idea. And I guess there's some truth to that, but the reality both times was my work went from whatever I started doing to then managing people or avoiding managing people.
Yeah.
I found myself in both situations actively trying to avoid having to micromanage other adults. Like I realized, you know, in the moment I didn't see it. But I realized after the fact that I was trying to, like, I want you to be independent enough to both work for me and help move the whole thing forward. But at the same time, like, I don't want to have to tell you what to do. It's just not my personality to direct people in that way. I just don't want to do that. And that's part of why scaling back down eventually made a lot more sense to me, because I realized, like, that's just not. It's not what I want to do. I don't want to manage people. I also don't want to be, and this is like a first world adult white male problem. Like, I get it. I also don't want to be bound to other people's opinion. I know that, like, most people have to bend a bit in what they do to other people's opinion, whether it's their boss or the, you know, community that they're in. And, like, I realize that. But I really just found that I don't want to have to consider other people's input at the same, I consider their input, but at the same level. Like, it's not a committee. My creativity cannot be by committee.
I found that tough.
That was really hard for me. And so, like, the scaling thing, I think can certainly work and could work for me in the future in certain ways, but I've got to figure out, if I ever go that route again, I have to figure out how to compartmentalize other people's opinions to the work that they do from my opinion to the work that I do. I think those need to be a little bit more separate. And I need to figure out how to have someone else manage the personnel part of, you know, of teamwork.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah.
It's funny. You're bringing up some memories for me of sharing concepts. Is when I did the TV show, Derek's gonna laugh if he ever hears this, is I would work, I'd be like, okay, cool, that's what you want, great, you know, like, not my opinion, yeah, I would respect the guys, but, you know, it's usually me against the production team. And I, since the studio was in my backyard and the workshop was here, when everybody left, I would just do what I wanted. And they come in the morning, like, I did it. Why? You should have waited for the cameras. I'm like, it's cool. It's done. I filmed it if you want to see it. I got it on my GoPro at 4K. They're like, ooh. You know, so there was a couple opportunities there where I was just like, cool, whatever you guys want. Whatever you guys want, I'm going to do what I want when you leave. Okay, cool, whatever you guys want. Sure, sure, sure. Because to argue, it's just pointless. I mean, it was a lot more playful and fun and passive aggressive than I'm making it sound. It was not like a fist fight. It was like,
yeah.
Oh, you see, you did do the wooden thing. Oh, it looks good. I'm like, I know it looks good. That's why I wasn't going to sit here and try and sell it to you yesterday. So I figured I'd just wait till you left and do it. And then you come in, you go, oh, it looks good. You were right. I'm like, I know I was right.
Yeah.
You know, so you take your liberties where you can. You don't always, you know, you don't always do that. But it was tough. And when I had a toy business, I had 4 or 5 employees. And the biggest problem, and I know I've talked about this, the biggest problem was like, who hates who today? Who's mad at who today? Who has a crush on who today? Because we had like a mix of people. And like that was the biggest problem. It's like, who said what to somebody? Like, this was all in the 90s. So like, if it happened now, we would have been sued like 4 times because of what somebody said to somebody that was inappropriate for some reason or another. And not on my side of the team. It's just amongst each other. It's like, so when I was able to get out from underneath that, I was like, I never want that type of full-time staff again. We had, when me and my brother Joseph had the toy, we would do freelance project managing. So we had several toy companies in our group that we would be managing their toys and their package design and their prototyping and their sales samples and their, in some cases, their manufacturing. We'd go and help engineer the first couple of test shots before it gets started on their own. And we had a couple of model makers, package designer, a soft goods designer, all on staff all the time. And every day it was like, who's mad at who for what? Who got offended that somebody said this about something else? And yeah, it was tough.
I luckily didn't have to deal with that type of stuff too much. I mean, the people that I've worked with in both situations were actually pretty fantastic.
It wasn't, you know, like I'm dealing with like kids right out of college that are scrappy. Yeah. And then the toy business kind of, you know how certain industries collect people? At that time in the 90s, a lot of like the kids were like scrappy graffiti type kids that like really wanted to make it. And so they were very competitive, and these guys that were working for me were very competitive with each other. And so that was part of it too. It's like, they were like kind of just passing through and they didn't care. They were young.
Yeah.
But whenever I have somebody work for me, it's really important that they know that this is temporary. I use me as a stepping stone for your next thing. I don't think I ever want to work with the same person for decades. Somebody who's working for me, because, you know, this is like a Gary Vee type thing, but nobody will ever have the same passion for the business as the business owner. Because to them, eventually, or maybe even right away, it's just a job. Like, that's a thing that they have to do to pay the bills. They're not invested like how I would be. And so, you know, my brother, he's been fantastic, and he puts up with, I change what I want to do all the time, and he just goes with the flow. He never questions why I'm changing, which I'm pretty lucky there. But
Can I jump in on that
real quick? Yeah.
So I would push back a little bit. I agree with you in that no one will have the same passion for it as the person who started it or the person who's responsible for it. But at the same time, I do think that people have a different level of, I don't even know how to say this. Like, people are different things in relation to business. Some people want to start, want to own, want to run, want to sell businesses or whatever. Some people they don't care what they do, they want to do it super well. Some people only want to invest in other businesses, then let other people do things well. Some people only want to buy things that have done well and flip it. You know what I mean? There's people have like a different spot in those business parts or whatever. And so I agree that no one's going to like love it like you love it and want to do the same thing that you're doing the same way that you would do it. But I do think that there are people, if you can find them, who are content and almost prefer to not be in that ownership pursuit kind of build, whatever. They want to hunker down, work hard, do well, and be rewarded for it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm obviously, I'm not telling you what to do, but I do, for anybody listening, I do think that there are like you can find somebody that can work with you alongside of you long term, like all the way long term, if you're willing to test people out. And it's going to take a while to find somebody, but I do think some people actually prefer to be in that position without the responsibility of having to make it work and having to make it survive.
Aaron, that's what Aaron always said. And I've said it here before. He said, he said when he worked on Mythbusters, he said, I always thought of Jamie and what's the other guy's name?
Adam.
Jamie and Adam as like the jet pilots, and I was the jet pilot mechanic. And he said, I think the same thing about working here, that you're the fighter pilot and I'm the fighter pilot mechanic. He goes, and I'm happy doing that. He goes, I'm more than happy to be the guy that helps facilitate what you want to do. I mean, he was one in a million.
But yeah,
that's when he came to me and he's like, I want to work here and this is how I see it. I was like, wow, that's pretty amazing. I was like, let's try it. And obviously it was working while it worked.
I think even if I did find the person that wanted to do this thing for decades and being okay with somebody else's vision, I thrive on change. Like every few years, we got to rearrange the living room just to make it different. And so like every few years, I work with another person, and you just get that new energy. I think I need that. Because I don't have this is a thing that I feel a little guilty for, but I should not. Because when you first start a business, you're all in. You want to work 20 hours a day because it's so freaking exciting and everything is new, and it just, you know, you're like, I'm making videos, I'm shipping products, I'm selling PDFs. And now it's like, I do all these things, but I don't want to do them for 20 hours a day. And I don't work 20 hours a day anymore. I just want to relax in the evenings now. And there's a little bit of guilt of like, oh, but there's always something you could be doing. You know, you don't need to watch episode 2 of The Bear when you could be, you know.
Gluing wood onto the Woody.
Yeah.
But I think like, for people that are looking to hire, I think that right there is a pretty good like definition or like job description of what you could first hire to scale a little bit. Is I don't think that you want to hire somebody that you are going to have to compete with creatively as your first hire. Mm. Somebody who also has, I'm air quoting, really good ideas, you know, that need to be worked into everything. I think that's dangerous. I think that's, unless you need that, if you're someone who needs help with the creative side of things, then that you hire a creative person. But if you don't want to work 20 hours, but there are still products to ship and there are like, you know, bathrooms to clean or whatever the other job is that has to be done to make you be able to focus more on the creative part, that's the thing you need to hire for. And it can be really confusing. Like, as creative people, we want to be around other creative people and we want to be around other people who are interested in making things. But I think there's a weird subconscious, not competition, but like an overlap in creative desire that can be a little bit disruptive. I mean, I think I found that for a while. Yeah. And it can be more productive if you can separate out the things. And we've talked about this before, where you separate out the three lists of things I have to do, things I should do but don't really want to, and things I can't do, or it's something like that. And then you go to that things I can't do list, and you hire somebody to start working there. Because the overlap is not a problem. They are helping you along in the business. But, you know, that your example of not wanting to work 20 hours, like what of that 20 hours could be done by other hands, and you wouldn't really miss doing it? Mm-hmm. That's you hire for. That's how you start to scale stuff, I think. The other part of that, though, and this I found this out the hard way, the part of that is that if you hire somebody to take on that, let's say 10 hours of your 20 hours, right? If you hire somebody for a very specific, they are going to do this thing, my recommendation to you, having lived through this, is to make sure that that person makes their money. They pay for that 10 hours that they are working. They can't just take off your workload, because then you have to still pay for two people with the work that you do. Mm-hmm. That person needs to produce something to cover their cost, at least. Because when things get tough, when YouTube changes, when sales go down, it's a very different feeling to then all of a sudden have to cover somebody else's salary to do work that, like, you could technically do the 20 hours if you needed to, but you already kind of committed to letting somebody else do 10, and now you got to work 20 to pay their 10 and stuff like
yeah.
that.
So,
yeah.
That's really difficult. That's why I never put on anybody full time. Yeah. Even when I needed it, I was like, you know what? I just can't do it.
Jimmy, have you ever worked with somebody in the past that you just did not gel with? And
mm-hmm.
yeah, I'm not gonna. I don't.
That was
want,
a good face.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I work with somebody, and you know, a lot of people around me would say he wants to be you. Wants to be you. Hmm. You see that? I'm like, oh no, I don't see it. Yeah, I don't want to say too much, but. Yeah. And then, like, when Aaron came along, like I said, you know, I love the guy to death. I miss him so much that he just was like, he's like, hey, he goes, I saw what you were doing the other day and I thought this would be a cool, I went ahead and bought this. And it was like having an extra brain that was like doing work behind. And it was not like he never wanted to be in front of the camera. That being said, he walked through the camera all the time. In his black clothes, we talk about it all the time on the TV show. He always walked behind the camera. Like, I'm in the middle of shooting, and he'd be like, what's up? And he'd just, like, wander by, and he'd walk right through the camera. I'm like, shooting. Like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize you were shooting. It was like this weird passive-aggressive thing. Like, he's like, I never want to be on camera. But meanwhile, he always found his way in the background of the shot.
That's funny.
And even Graz, I think, found it. There was one time we were shooting the show. That was when I was doing my YouTube videos, but then when we did the Netflix show, he was always hustling, doing something behind the scenes, moving something from here to there. Like, he never stopped moving. And at one point we were shooting, and he drives through the windows in the scissor lift. He drives, like, through one window, in and out to the other window, in and out to the other window. And it's like, Mike's like, Todd, Aaron, could you not drive the scissor? There's no reason to be driving the scissor lift right now. And I think they used a piece of that take. And you could see Aaron drive through the back window at one point. Yeah. No, but yeah, it's someone like that. Like, I saw this reminds me of a time when Casey Neistat said everybody sends him things to work for him. He goes, and the biggest mistake everybody says is right away in their resume, they say, I want to do exactly what you do. Mm. How can I work with somebody that wants to do exactly? I'm already doing that. If you want to learn from me, come here and devote the time to the I can't do that list. And then take what you want and move through it. But you can't come here and do exactly what I do.
Yeah.
You have to do everything around what I do. Pick up what you want from it and then move on. Or don't move on if that's your thing. But to start off a resume saying, I want to do exactly what you do is a tough start. And Casey breaks it down. That's from 10 years ago, but it always stuck with me.
I was really blessed to, and I like to make stuff, to work with, like, everybody I worked with has been fantastic. I mean, they're great people that I still call close friends, and I never had any of that type of, you know, I'm trying to take your spot. I'm trying to, like, become whatever.
Well, some people do it unconsciously, and that's
dumb. Yeah, that's true.
You know, they don't realize they're doing it. It's just they're so goal oriented that they don't realize what they should be doing in that moment in time.
But they were all really fantastic to work with. But the job before, like, when we had a big team of developers and stuff, there were a couple of people who you could tell were, like, you know, only a couple of them were right out of school. Most of them had been in the business for a while, but you could tell a lot of them wanted to become the senior person in the room as quickly as possible so that they could delegate and, you know, not actually have to write code and not have to whatever they wanted to. So there were a couple of people who were pretty full of themselves, not to say that they weren't more skilled than I was. I don't mean that at all. They were full of themselves. And you were asking if there were anybody that was hard to work with or whatever. And that job, there were a couple of people that were just incredibly difficult to be around. And, The only time I've ever had to fire somebody because of their like performance was at that job. This one dude was just terrible. And, you know, it was rough to have to sit him down and, like, it wasn't a fight that we had, you know, like, I had to break up a fight and was like, all right, get out, you're out. It wasn't like that. It was like I had to call somebody into my office and sit him down and be like, look, you're doing these things. We've talked about these things this many times, and now you have to leave. and like, that is a situation that I really don't like being in. Hmm. Which is another thing about hiring and about scaling is that sometimes it doesn't work. And for whatever reason it doesn't work, you still might have to do the face-to-face, like, we've got to end it thing. And that, no matter the situation, that is hard. And so if you don't want to do that, then I would suggest not committing to, you know, full-time. Like you were saying, David, put it, like, let everybody know that it's temporary. Everything has a start-end date. It's a contract or whatever, and if the contract doesn't get renewed, it's nothing personal, but just like our time is done with that thing. I think that is a pretty safe way to do some of that interpersonal stuff if you don't like the confrontation of that, which I'm not a big fan of. Yeah, but.
So scaling.
Yeah.
Just.
I personally, to your original question about like what we thought about scaling and what we will think about scaling in the future. I've done it and learned a whole lot from it. And so for me personally, moving forward, I think if things stay exactly how they are, they won't survive past when YouTube decides I'm done. Right. But I don't think scaling in that, like bringing in more faces and, you know, making the YouTube channel into like a group thing, I don't think that's the answer. I think it's a pivot more than a scale. And part of that pivot into other things may require other people to make those other things work well.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me going forward, like it's going to be contract for help. It would take a whole lot for me to really dedicate another full-time position to anybody. They would have to be an absolutely necessary part of making something bigger than I could make it on my own, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, the sense of relief of having to wake up every day, or at least some days, and know that I don't have to talk to anybody is like a vacation day. And I don't mean that like derogatory. Like, I love talking to people. I'm obviously very social. But knowing the next, like if I wake up tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, I don't have to really talk to anybody or think, combine thoughts with somebody till 1 o'clock. Like, so from 8 to 1 o'clock, it's like a vacation, even though I'm working my ass off. But the idea of not having to combine conversation and chit and chat and, you know, my phone is a lot of times on silent, and I have to look at it to see if somebody's trying to contact me, and I like make a conscious effort sometimes to just not look at my phone for 4 hours, because I want to use that time up until when I have like that 1 o'clock Zoom call, to just, and yeah, the older I get, the more I cherish those moments, because they get so much done. You know, whether I'm weed whacking or cutting the hedges or, you know, it's just. The solitude time, it's just very, it's a good time. You need that to incubate ideas and think on things. You know, it's important. Pet the cat. Yeah.
Any other thoughts on this? Either one of you?
Pet the cat.
Feed the chickens and pet the cat. I have an interesting after hours conversation.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I actually just thought of one. I want to talk about my watch.
I have a
in the after show.
A good opportunity with something. Everything could be the thing. I always say it all the time. Everything is the thing. You know, the Netflix show, the NBC show, the HGTV show, this opportunity with the bags or the factory. Everything is the thing. It's never the thing. It's always just a thing. I say that in my life. This could be a really good a thing. Something coming up.
And I actually have secret stuff to talk about.
Ooh,
right on.
You sure do. Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters, and then we'll get to the after show. And they all get to hear what we're going to talk about, because everybody that supports us on Patreon gets the after show. We actually have a new patron this week. Yeah, so we have a group of top supporters. They go above and beyond, and one of those swapped out this week for a good reason, and I don't know that I'm allowed to say that reason, but he emailed us, and congratulations. So... big thanks to Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leather Goods, Sean Beckner, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, The New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, Matthias Garnow, A Pretty Big Deal, Inc., and Pete Rondeau from Glory Day Amusements. Pete, welcome. Glad to have you. But also, people like... I did not bring up the list, so we're going to say Gordon F. Crago.
Thank you, Gordon F. Crago.
Crago?
Crago? Crago.
Crago?
Crago? Let go of my Crago. I've heard that before.
Okay. We have a lot of people that support us at all different levels, and we are very grateful for all of them. They make the show happen. You know, they're the reason that Jimmy is willing to not talk to anybody on Wednesday morning. So huge thanks to from David and I to all the supporters for giving Jimmy a reason to be here.
Thank you very much.
If you want to support the show, if you want to get the after show and hear their secret stuff from this week, go to patreon.com/makingit, sign up at any level, and then the after show podcast feed is up there in Patreon. You can add it to your podcast player. Mm-hmm. There's links there for the video after show on YouTube if you want to watch it that way.
Reach on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you do all that.
Do.
What?
That's it.
Yep. You're quiet. I can't hear you.
How's that?
That's better.
Yeah.
What do you have to recommend?
Emily Baker. Any law nerds out there? If you know what I mean. If you're a law nerd, you know what I'm talking about. Emily D. Baker. She's
lawn?
A,
lawn? Like law, grass nerds?
L-A-W, that too. No, law. L-A-W. Law. Law nerds. Emily Baker is, if anybody's into like jailhouse lawyering like I am, it's funny. Rachel's always asking me questions. Like when legal stuff comes up, she asks me, she goes, what would be, I'm like, well, that would be the DA would have to handle that. They would have to go to grand jury. Like she asks me like I'm a consigliere. And oh, that reminds me, the other night was sitting having dinner and Rachel was either going to be a lawyer or a journalist. And she owns an art gallery, but she said, she goes, I was afraid to take the LSATs. And I was like, what are the LSATs exactly? She's like, I don't know. I'm like, she's like, they're a complicated question. So I asked ChatGPT, I was like, give me one of the questions from the LSAT. And because I don't know how to read, I hand the phone to Rachel and she reads the question to me. It's really long and involved and is a multiple choice. I got the answer right. She was blown away that I got the answer right. I go, let's do it again. Second one, long drawn out question with reasoning. I got that question right. She's like, you should have been a lawyer.
Jimmy Giresta, maker at law.
Maker at law. So check out Emily Baker. It's great watching. She's a former DA, obviously a lawyer, trial lawyer. And she just has these live streams where they most recently obviously covered the Karen Reed case, but they cover other cases and dissect law and Diddy and all this stuff. And she just basically spews an education if you're interested in the law. Emily D. Baker. There's a few of them I watch. I also watch Peter Trago. He's another one. The Lawyer You Know. They're all friends. It's like our group, our family, like our community and our family. They all have this very similar thing. Online lawyers. My buddy's a really good lawyer, the guy I've known for many years. He's actually my lawyer, so to speak. I tell him, you got to do this because he's very quirky. I was like, you should do this. He's like, I don't know. I was like, you'd be really good at it. He's also a filmmaker, so I was like, there's no reason why you shouldn't be doing this. So I'm going to try and talk my friend Dave into doing that.
Cool.
I've got two picks this week. My little hack, my own little life hack of making a playlist just for making it work. So I watch a video, I'm like, ooh, I could talk about that and just drop it in the playlist. The first one is, it's a video from a month ago. It's called When Pontiac Built the First Transparent Car. And this is back in 1939.
Oh, wow, so, like as an educational tool? I think I saw this come across my feed.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So plexiglass was a new thing back then. And to showcase what the like the innards of the car and all the technology that went into the car. They made a transparent car that they some big fair that they showed it off, and then different dealerships got to have the car for a few days or a week or whatever to show it off to potential customers. And it is really cool. I mean, just the thumbnail looks freaking cool. Yeah. So that's the first one. And then the other one is a really old video. It was uploaded to YouTube 17 years ago, but it's wow. The behind the scenes making of the HBO intro from way back in the 80s. And so before computers and stuff, Jimmy, you're muted.
Yeah, I remember that. It has like the camera flowing over the little wooden
yeah,
town.
They had to make a whole little town.
The thing that spins that light.
Yeah.
Like the HBO or something that turns into like a streaming of light.
Yeah.
Which is like captured on I remember that specifically.
So yeah, the HBO logo, which looks computerized, is actually real. It's like it's made out of brass that they then chromed and then ran a camera around it. And then you, on a green screen, cut out the background and then added these other graphics to it. And it's That's things insane. Like this was a lot of work back in the 80s.
Now you just tell ChatGPT what you want and it spits it out.
It just spits it out, yeah.
Even ChatGPT. Crazy. Cool. Let's see. So mine is, I've talked about this guy before. Actually, I don't know what his name is. Sorry. The channel is called Flatlander Tech. And he has been making a bunch of content creation, and not even, I guess, just content creation, but he makes like a desk and holders for things on desks and camera rigs. And the videos are really nice looking, very chill, very like calm and smooth. And he made a camera stand, single pole, kind of like I've done in the past, but his was based off of one that DSLR shooter, or I think that's what his name is, Caleb Pike, one he made. So he made a version of that, but he actually mentioned me in this video, which is why somebody sent it to me. For the counterweight stuff at the bottom, he did something similar to what I did in mine. But I've been watching his videos for a while. He makes really cool, nice looking videos, cool gear. So if you want to see how he makes his desk with like all his little holders for things and all that type of stuff, go check him out. It's good stuff. Yeah. All right. You guys got anything else for this week? I'm ready for some secrets. I want to hear some secrets.
The go-kart event is this Saturday.
Oh, wow.
In East Durham. So come 12 to 6. Everybody wants to know what they can bring. If you're going to come and show, just bring some hamburgers or maybe a pack of pop or something, soda, whatever. That's all.
And
it's all free.
In addition to that, there is some movement on the 500, like the 500th episode.
Yes. Me and Dave had a meeting yesterday, and we're gonna Carolina Shoes is gonna sponsor the 500th episode. It's gonna happen in September. We're nailing down the actual date, but it's gonna be in possibly the first week of September. And awesome. we're trying to put together the guest speakers right now.
And as soon as we get all that stuff figured out, Patreon will hear about it first, so they can sign up first. It's going to be probably free.
Free. And there's going to be an option for like a donation. Whatever you would pay would go directly to a veterans donation organization.
Yeah.
We wouldn't take any of it. Neither would Carolina. It's just something that they support, and we were totally obviously okay with that.
So that'll be first out. Come, first serve for the free stuff. So Patreon people will get that first. So if you are not a Patreon supporter and you want to get that first, you know, go sign up. All right, cool. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
Catch you next time.
Love you guys. Thank you.